We'll call a meeting to order. This is the State Government Finance Committee meeting for Wednesday, May 4th, 2011. We're still a little short of a quorum, but we're going to proceed anyway with one of the bills. Representative Banyan has been delayed, but Representative McFarland, if you're ready, we'll take House File 1579. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McFarland. And we'll have to hold off moving, making any motions until we have a quorum, as you know.
Thank you. Would you like us to address the amendment even though we can't move it?
You could explain it, certainly, and get the process started here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have Amendment H1579A4. It should be in your packets. And I will have Joe Matthews explain. We did some cleaning up after the last meeting. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Matthews. I'm sorry, Mr. Matthews.
I got promoted.
Yeah, that's right.
No.
Mr.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews from the Association of Minnesota Counties. And also, Tony Murphy was in town as well, so we brought him along from Beltrami County if there are some other questions. But the amendment, as Representative McFarland just indicated, is similar to what we discussed last committee, but has been cleaned up somewhat. Specifically, again, the first section, lines 1.5 through lines 1.16, are actually brought to us by our friends at the National Rifle Association, who helped us redraft that to tighten it up a little bit and ensure that there's no preemption from the county level of state or federal authority. Lines 1.17 through the end of the first page are really brought to us by the advocates, NAMI and others, who had a great suggestion that we include some public input in the process as well. Lines 2.2 through 2.24 is language that we worked on with AFSCME Council 5 and 65. We did do some digging around to try and find some precedent in law on how we handle labor issues, and we did find, with their assistance, one example from the 90s during the Carlson administration when there was some consolidation of state agencies, and so this language is really modeled off of that. We did add line 2.23 and 2.24, some language suggested by committee staff, that really tightens this up to make sure it only applies to the pilot project's period of implementation. We wanted to make sure that this is not an expansion of anyone's, an expansion of rights or an infringement of rights in regards to PELRA. And so that was our intent with that. And I think, Mr. Chair, that's a fairly brief summary of the amendment. We do delete Article 3 in here, which is something that I think there's a lot of interest in continuing to work on. But I think we just felt that we maybe didn't want to kind of do that on the fly.
We do now have a quorum, and so I will officially call the meeting to order. And we have the, so we don't forget it as we move through, we have the minutes from yesterday. Would someone move those minutes? Representative Banyan moves the minutes from yesterday. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The minutes are approved. And then I will move House File 1579, and our intent is to send that to Ways and Means next. And so, Representative McFarland, you're wishing the A4 amendment?
Yes, I am.
And I will move the A4 amendment. Questions or discussions on the A4 amendment? Representative Benson.
I've spoken with our testifier. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've spoken with the testifiers about, and I know this was a staff potential remedy to include it, that it would be narrowed down to just the period. There was testimony from the gentleman that was with you in the previous committee hearing that, in essence, supported my claim by saying, well, we've already done a lot of downsizing, and they've done it without any additional language that's been incorporated into this amendment. And they've done it because they have a local contract that allows them for procedures. And my recommendation, and it still is my recommendation for my support, is that you exclude Section 4 and take out that language and just include that we're going to abide by the local agreement. that gives the employees plenty of protection in terms of this test period. I'd like for your comments, please.
Representative or Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that as we've wrestled with this issue, one of the things that we were trying to do in conjunction with the representatives from AFSCME Council 5 and 65 is to have some clarity in the law as to how we would handle issues that arise from employees. I think that there are a number of avenues available to us as counties if we're going to do some serious restructuring, whether it's under Joint Powers Act, it's under current statutes governing county activity, or the newly created service delivery authorities from last biennium. We do have some other avenues by which we can do some serious restructuring. You know, we aren't anticipating that this is going to be something, as it is just a pilot project, we're not anticipating serious layoffs as a result. However, I think, you know, we would defer to the will of the committee as to how they'd be most comfortable proceeding on this particular issue.
Representative Benson.
I would, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would really prefer that you strike Section 4 unless you have an amendment with you today that reduces that down to just that you're going to abide by local contracts. I'd be more than willing to make an oral amendment, but I also know that you've come prepared.
I came prepared.
You're right.
Is it okay?
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it okay to amend with another amendment then? Amend the A5 amendment. I think it's being passed out if it wasn't.
So the intent of the A5 is to amend the A4?
Yes.
Mr. Shepard, is that appropriate process? Ms. Dyson. Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, the A5 amends the amendment, that the A4 amendment, and what it does is delete the most of the language that is on page 2, the county employees. It leaves the headnote and then deletes lines 3 through 16 and through the beginning of line 17, so that the only thing that's going to be left is nothing in this section shall be construed as diminishing any rights of employers or employees as defined in the collective bargaining agreements under this chapter or chapter 179A. That's what would remain in this section.
Okay. Representative McFarland, that's your wish?
Yes, it is.
Then I will move the Representative Benson, I'll let you move the amendment then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the A5 amendment.
Okay. We're on the amendment to the amendment. Discussion on the amendment to the amendment. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, is there anyone that could testify about this?
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak on this amendment to the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have talked to AFSCME, and they are okay with doing it at this time. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Matthews? Just to clarify, we're continuing to engage in discussion with AFSCME 5 and 65 and the governor's office as well, and if we find out that this is too controversial or doesn't go far enough, this is something that we feel we'll probably have to revisit before we get to the governor's desk. But at this time, it appears that this would be acceptable.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, it would be a lot harder to put it in than to take it off at a later time. I think without representative of the groups that are affected, I would prefer to leave it in, and when we have written confirmation or in-person testimony, take it out at that point along the line, and we're not the last stop.
Representative McFarland, you're saying that they were aware were aware that this was going to be coming forward.
They are, and they want to continue working as we go
okay.
forward.
Further discussion on the amendment to the amendment. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of the amendment, and I realize there's probably a couple of twists and turns to go before we get to the end here. One concern I had about the language in Section 4 was that it said we had to have procedures for notification in collective bargaining agreements before the pilots could proceed, and that could be multiple years. Frankly, you know, if this law doesn't pass before the next collective bargaining agreements. We got a long road. So I appreciate the willingness of the author and others to kind of get to a slightly more blank slate. But, Mr. Chair, if we could, I'd be curious to hear from Mr. Murphy about their experience at Beltrami County and kind of the engagement and involvement of the collective bargaining agreements and, or units and how they kind of manage that whole process. I don't want to assume that they have, in effect, done what this bill prescribes or allows already in Beltrami, but I know they did a lot of this kind of thing, and I'm curious how the collective bargaining units were engaged and how they worked out, and maybe your opinion on this section of the bill.
Mr. Murphy, welcome back. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's my privilege to be back. I am grateful that we've proceeded to this point where we're having this discussion today. I commend you for that. We have been doing a great deal of redesign and reinvention at Beltrami County already. We have just simply included the employees and the collective bargaining units as part of that redesign effort. They've been at the table every step of the way. We've proceeded under the assumption that the best ideas for our county in redesign are coming from the frontline employees, the trenches. And so we've been engaging them, and literally it's their ideas that we're moving forward with. And we have not experienced any conflict over union management relationships as it involves redesign activities. Of course, the climate of that we're under right now economically, there's been plenty of opportunities for conflict in other areas, but in the area of redesign, they've actually been extremely helpful to us as we've been generating new ideas and opportunities in innovation within the boundaries that we already have established with our state relationships. So I don't see, quite frankly, from Beltrami County's perspective, we don't necessarily see the language proposed in either of these amendments as problematic. We would just continue to work with our employees as we always have.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Further discussion on the amendment to the amendment? If not, all in favor of Representative Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members, I apologize. I think that the amendment, the A5, needs a slight modification where it says page 2, line 17, delete everything before nothing. In order for this to apply to all of the MAGIC Act as opposed to just section 0.85, it should read delete everything before shall and insert nothing in sections 402A.60 to 402A.95. And I'll give that to the committee. It's
Representative Benson, do you wish to?
I would like. It's a technical, but I would like to move that.
Okay. Well, you can incorporate that into the A5 amendment. And Ms. Dyson, would you read that again so everybody's clear?
Mr. Chair and members, the A5 amendment on line 1.4. It should read page 2, line 17. Delete everything before shall. And insert nothing in sections 402A.60 to 402A.95.
Is everybody clear on that amendment that's been incorporated by the author to the A5 amendment?
I think we could use it one more time.
One more time, Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members, on the A5 amendment, line 1.4, it should read page 2, line 17, delete everything before shall and insert nothing in sections 402A.60 to 402A.95.
Yeah, it's technical clarification on the language. All right. All in favor of the A5 amendment to the amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carried. You now have before you the A4 amendment as amended. Discussion to the A4 amendment as amended. Representative McFarland.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify, Mr. Chair, that when we're deleting Article 3, that does not mean that we're pursuing it. It is also in House File 1599, the North Star Council, so it is not dead.
There is still another bill
right.
that relates to that issue.
Right.
Okay. The A4 amendment as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The amendment is adopted. Further presentation from the author or testifiers?
If anybody wanted to ask any questions of the testifiers, I think.
Okay, any further questions of the testifiers? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to this bill? If Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we laying this bill over?
No, the motion will be to recommend it to pass and re-refer it to Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you much.
Okay. I will renew the motion that House File 1579, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Mr. Murphy and Mr. Matthews, thank you very much. And keep the county reform underway, please. Now we'll move back to Representative Banyan's bill. Before we do that, Ms. Roberts, would you give the committee the update on the latest on the financial or the fiscal note for 1579?
For the previous bill?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. For House File 1579, with the adoption of the A4 amendment today, which removed Article 3, that removed the impact for most of the agencies that would be under the state government finance jurisdiction. Previously, OET and MMB had been assigned to the fiscal note, and they were removed in anticipation of that amendment. The remaining two agencies that had been assigned were Department of Revenue and the Governor's Office, who both responded that there was no impact to their office. There are some other agencies that have been assigned that are not in the jurisdiction of this committee.
And by going to Ways and Means, that will verify that there is not any concern there.
I believe so. And I know that the Human Services Policy Committee did have a hearing on the bill yesterday. Even though they didn't have possession of the bill, they had an informational hearing. And so the Human Services Committees are aware of it also.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to, at this time, move first the DE2 amendment to 1506 that should be in everybody's packet at this time. And thank you. Okay, and we'll take care of that in a moment. But I'd like to first move the DE2, which. We'll get the language in shape and incorporates the two amendments that we gave on last week on Thursday, incorporates those, and then adds some additional clarifying language in terms of understanding what the roles and responsibilities of this legislative budget office would be. What it does is really sort of a sign for us that the initial assignment of a fiscal note once a chair of Ways and Means or Senate Finance or any of the finance committees like ours would do would be made by the by this office within LCPFP. That request would go out to agencies to receive information, but it then makes the sign off from it come back to LCPFP and its legislative budget office for that final signature. This was done after a good meeting between Mr. Hubinger from the LCC, our chief fiscal analyst, Mr. Marks, with Ms. Roberts, with the legislative auditor, Jim Nobles. I've had also conversations with folks from MMB to be sure that they as well understood what it was we were doing so that they could write the fiscal note. And we have a fiscal note for this, which if you will, Mr. Chair, I will have Ms. Roberts walk through for us, and that will then take us to the second part of this, which will be to actually fill in the blanks on our appropriation.
Okay. Representative Banyan moved the DE 2 amendment, and so Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, you have in your packet a document that looks like this. It's a little different than the regular fiscal note, simply because we had an issue with printing the fiscal note yesterday. There was a technical issue, so I put together a summary page for the committee, but we will have the official fiscal note signed off on later today. The two agencies that are impacted are Minnesota Management and Budget, which would show a savings of $253,000 a year, and this is from the transfer of the functions related to the fiscal note review. The cost in the fiscal note are for the Legislative Coordinating Commission, $3 million in the first year, fiscal year 12, and then ongoing costs of about $1.4 million. If you look at the final page of this packet, you'll see the outline of the LCPFP costs within the LCC. The main thing to note, in the first year, there's $1.5 million for the fiscal note system replacement costs. So that's the one-time cost and the difference between the 2 years. And then Mr. Hubinger has broken it down, looking at the different staffing levels related first to the fiscal note and revenue and local impact note review costs. That is estimated to take about 4.75 FTE. And then because this bill also would have the LCPFP doing a budget forecast, it's estimated that would take 6 FTE plus some consulting time. So the total, again, it would be $3 million in fiscal year 12. That's net of some costs that the LCC would already absorb, and then $1.4 million ongoing. And the net to the state, if you go back to the first page, to the general fund in fiscal year 12 is $2.75 million, and then $1.2 million ongoing.
Questions about the fiscal note? Representative Banyan, any comments with regard to that fiscal note at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Roberts, for the summary. I'm not sure I've done nearly so good a job. I think my comments are first of all to understand that this does a fair amount of the work that is done within parts of MMB, but I think we've got people from MMB here who can explain for us if we want additional testimony about it, that not everything that those people do in MMB would be taken by us, so they would have some staff reductions, but it takes in essence about 15% of a group of people's times away, but they still have the other 85% still to do. We've represented that. I think MMB has made a reduction that at least in my discussions with them seemed a reasonable estimate of what they're doing, and the allocation of the cost. And I think it's important to note the other functions that they do. And rather than have me play telephone for that, I'm not sure if anyone can. Can you talk to this, Ms. Baranda? Thank you. Maybe we should have that discussion first, so that you can understand what it is our current budget officers do. And thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Catherine Barondo. I'm a budget officer with management and budget.
Welcome.
We had a meeting with Representative Banyan yesterday, and we did talk to him a little bit about what the budget officers do. We said that during the session, budget officers spend about 30% of their time on fiscal note review and asking questions and working with the agencies on completing the fiscal notes. So if you take that over the course of the year, it's about 15%. During the rest of the time, budget officers will, starting with the end of the session, work with the agencies on setting up the budget bills and the accounting system so that everything is implemented correctly in the accounting system. Then we move on to reviewing agency spending plans for the next year so that their spending plans are consistent with the budget bills that were passed. After that, we work on fiscal year close. Then we start budget development for the next year. It's either the biennial budget or the capital budget or the supplemental budget. We work on those things, and then we also work on gathering information for the two forecasts.
Well, thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Barondo? Representative Benson?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a question about the fiscal note replacement cost, and this came up in the narrative by Mrs. Roberts. The $1.5 million you got in the first year, fiscal note replacement, is this because there's a new agency, or are you just going to replace that regardless and you've attached it to this bill?
Representative Banyan?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Benson, if you don't mind, I'll take that one myself.
Sure.
In discussion with MMB, also with Mr. Kiebinger, and in our own fiscal staff here in the House, we have basically, I think the polite term for it would be, a legacy system. It's pretty old. It's something we've talked about replacing off and on for quite some time, but never seems to happen. You'll see when I move the specific appropriations here in a moment, I'm going to separate that piece out. And if this committee or if Ways and Means decides that that's something they don't want to do, that's fine. But I will tell you, I mean, you can see we had a minor stroke in the system yesterday in getting this fiscal note out here. So anyway, we didn't try to stage a demonstration here, but we do have some issues with it. It is approximately a 20-year-old system. It is something that frankly, in my opinion, is something that needs to be addressed and probably something that needs to be replaced. I think maybe Mr. Kiebinger can come down a bit and talk about whether or not, you know, $1.5 million is appropriate cost. Maybe he has, and he may not have information, or maybe you have information, Ms. Barondo, on what it costs and where that $1.5 million comes from. That was the number given to me, and as a fair representation, and in thanks for the work they've done on this, I wanted to present it to you as being a cost that we seem to really need to think about.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Benson.
I just want to make sure that for the committee at least that we understand that it is separated out. This is not essential to being able to do this bill. It's essential maybe to carry on your work in the most efficient manner, but if we weren't doing, or looking at this bill, it's quite evident that at least the agency has not planned for a replacement of the software. So, for the committee in voting on this proposal, this bill, just to make sure that we understand that if need be for saving money, we could still do this and maintain the current system.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Benson, my understanding is, yes, that's correct, but you're going to get, at some point there's going to have to be some replacement on it, but is it necessary in order to do this particular bill to do that money, to put that money in? Probably not. What they will have to do instead is they will leave the server at MMB. Our folks here will get access to it. I'm looking at Mr. Hubinger. It's nodding his head. Thank you. We will get access to it, and we will then use it as it is. Understanding again that it's a system that is I'll use a blunt word, antiquated. and something that at some point we do need to make some improvements on.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Benson.
One last comment, though. We're in a pretty tough budget time, mm-hmm. and as much as I love the bill, in fact, I think that probably it was the conversation that we had when we left this meeting one time that spurred you to create the bill. I would hope we could take a second look at whether or not that part of it needs to proceed, so that we can hopefully maybe get it passed. So, thanks.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Representative Benson. If you would, and I'll look at the chair for how he wants to proceed, maybe we would vote the DE2 onto the bill, then we could come to the appropriation, and I think you'll see in the amendment. I have the bill. Thank you, Ms. Brown. I think you'll see you have a place where if you want to remove it, it would be relatively easy to do. I realize that adding that $1.5 million would be something that this committee would probably want to take a long look at.
Thank you.
Representative Benson and members, since this needs to go to Ways and Means, if Ways and Means decides that this is an important thing to do, but there's not the money for it, that still could be the result. And so I would suggest that this issue, this discussion, is a good discussion to have, but Ways and Means will have to be the final arbiter on it. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Banyan, so in your DE2 amendment, where there's a blank on the last page, mm-hmm. page 5, what are you talking what numbers that are going to go in there? Is it are these the numbers that we're concerned about here as it goes to Ways and Means? And what Representative Benson just mentioned here, or what exactly are we looking to put into these?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know that the A3 amendment has not yet been circulated. I believe it's still getting copied around. So I'll read the numbers to you. I'll read the numbers from here to you, but again, I would like to... Oh, it is being circulated. Thanks. I just ask you to look at that, but... I'm thinking in terms of process, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Anderson, if we put the DE2 amendment on first and then we take up the A3 amendment, if Representative Benson wanted to address this question on the $1.5 million here, he'd have the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, he's trying to amend an amendment to an amendment, and he can't do that, as I understand our process.
That's correct, Representative Banyan. Representative Kahn.
But these reductions to MMB.
Representative Kahn, please use your mic.
Sorry. It's hitting me in the head when it was there. These reductions in MMB don't assume reductions in any other bills, do they?
Representative Banyan.
Does MMB sort of serves the whole state government?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn. I'm trying to process that question in my head.
Well, for example, let's just go to the House Omnibus Bill,
okay.
which does cuts across departments all the time, and that's cutting 13% in MMB.
Right. Representative Banyan.
So how does this fit in with all of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, this bill stands alone and does not assume any of the savings made out of our omnibus bill. So if it were to pass on its own, what it does is take the $253,000 in savings that MMB has identified in its own budget and transfer that over, in essence, to the LCPFP, and then adds approximately $1.2 million over to out of the general fund to top up what it needs to perform its functions.
And
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, how does that fit in with the overall cut to MMB? It's on top of it, included as part of it. What happens for other departments, other bills, since the EBOs function in those other bills?
Representative Kahn, my understanding is if both our omnibus bill and this bill were to pass, that this would be in addition. This would be on top of the cuts that are in that.
And
Representative Kahn.
Chairman, how does that fit in with the functioning of other departments and other bills.
Representative Banyan.
MMB serves everybody.
You know? Understood. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kahn. That's a fair question. As you heard Ms. Barrando testify, she has other functions that she performs during that the rest of the year. Some of her time would now be available to sort of take up some of the activities that might be cut and might be lost in their general reductions that are in the omnibus bill. But those management decisions are really left to MMB to do. I don't think we can prescribe them from here.
Well.
Representative Kahn.
Chairman, by making these cuts, I think we are kind of prescribing them.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, only in the sense that we are changing or removing from the EBOs a couple of their budget functions. Some of them will remain. They still have budgets to prepare for their folks post session. They still have to get ready the documents by which the governor prepares his budgets and so on. So I think we should say that the EBO function doesn't exist, but we are in some sense, and if that's what you mean, I agree with you. Changing some of their tasks in terms of what they do.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Banyan, on the fiscal note, page three, it shows that staff compensation right now is 4.75 FTEs. That's the projected for fiscal year 12, 13, 14, 15, and then office space equipment, there's a cost there, and fiscal note maintenance. That's presently the projection for those next years. I'm wondering if that's the present cost also for fiscal note costs this year, and are they projecting an increase of 10% or 15% or... Representative Benson mentioned that, you know, that fiscal note replacement of 1.5, we don't necessarily have to do that right now. If these costs are stationary, do you know what the costs are right now that are in present?
I'm going to look over Mr. Huebinger.
Representative Banyan?
Maybe you... I'm going to see if Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, maybe Mr. Huebinger has a comment on that. In the meantime, while I think he's getting some help over there, I think it's important to remember that the EBOs work during the session on fiscal notes. After the session is over, these individuals will be moved to work on budget forecast. They will have other functions that we talk about that are listed in the LCPFP, and those duties are listed in the original. I think those duties are still in the DE2, yes, on the second page, and so they'll be available to work on that. So they will have other functions besides just the fiscal note process, and I think that may help explain some of the value that's there. One thing I'd point out, Representative Anderson, is this is a commission that is typically done a small fraction of the items we've listed for it in its duties. These folks will have the ability to re-energize a commission that I think could do a lot more if they had more time for it. Did you have anything to add to that,
Mr. Huebinger?
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning, members. I'm Greg Huebinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. In part, our office is responsible for preparing fiscal notes on bills that have an impact on the legislature. I was just conferring with the colleagues at MMB about Representative Anderson's your question about the difference in cost for what is incurred now at MMB to having LCPFP carry out this function. a best estimate would be to look at page 3 of our portion of the fiscal note. The second box that shows the estimated costs for the LCPFP to prepare fiscal notes and revenue notes and local impact notes. The cost, the personnel and support costs would be in FY12 $456,000 plus the office cost of $65,000, which is about $510,000. If you wanted to see a comparison with the current cost, you'd look at the MMB savings as a result of transferring that function to the legislature, which is about $250,000. So there's a roughly an increase of about $250,000. That's partially a result of the fact that MMB has this fiscal note function spread out over 12 EBOs, executive budget officers. When you move that on during a session basis, that's about 25% of their time. We've, in this fiscal note, replicated that for staffing levels for the LCPFP.
Think about that. Okay, members, we have before us the DE2 amendment, and the A3 amendment would be considered after we act on the DE2. Further discussion on the DE2 amendment? If not, all in favor of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The DE2 amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Banyan, you wish to fill in the blanks with the A3 amendment.
Members, you now have the A3 amendment before you. I apologize that it wasn't here before, but the fiscal note got to us fairly late in the day yesterday. You've heard a fair amount of the discussion we've had before in the A3 before you. Funds this bill at the levels as prescribed by the fiscal note. So in the first two blanks in section three, the first two parts of section three are filled in with the numbers as represented in the fiscal note as the gross cost of the legislative budget office proposal. Lines 1.5 through 1.7 pull out that $1.5 million. So this would be an additional $1.5 million you'd put in specifically to fund the replacement of the fiscal note and of the fiscal note system, the BBS as we call it here. Am I right? I'm looking over at Ms. Roberts. Is that right?
Ms. Roberts?
No, that's actually... I got them wrong, right?
Mr. Chair, members, BBS refers to the biennial budget system, and the fiscal note tracking system is part of that system, but a separate component within it.
Right. And
Representative Banyan.
Thank you. And Ms. Roberts, just so that we don't have any confusion on that, this $1.5 million would only replace that module, right, not the whole system.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Banyan,
that's correct.
Yeah. Right. Ms.
Thank
Roberts.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, so thank you. The $1.5 million then is represented on lines 1.5 through 1.7. And then lines 1.8 and 1.9 transfer the savings of the of $253,000 each year from MMB back into, take that back so that we can do some partial funding at least of this legislative budget office from MMB. It should reduce some of the. It should take up some of that savings that we get there. But again, representing that the EBOs only perform this function part time during the year and does not completely wipe out the money they use to compensate them. So I move the A3 amendment.
The A3 amendment has been moved. Members, technically, I understand. The point that the new systems do not have to be done at this time in order for this bill to proceed, but I think we ought to make a statement that these systems need to be upgraded. What we've been experiencing is just not good government when we can't have an efficient operating system. It is an antiquated system that we have. And I think we ought to make a statement that this needs to be done. Now, if Ways and Means decides that there's not money for this, then they will have the opportunity to take that out, say we're not going to spend that money at this point in time. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Banyan, I appreciate we're working fast and just getting numbers and trying to put all of this together. And, you know, I support your bill and am going to vote for it. I do think a little extra work maybe between now and Ways and Means would be helpful. Representative Anderson raised a question as to why it's a reduction of whatever it was to more or less two people in the executive branch agencies, yet an addition of four people in the legislature. And I think that's a good question to ask. And what is it that we would do with that increased bandwidth? And I know we've had the discussion about all the other jobs that they're supposed to do that maybe aren't getting done as robustly as they could be. I think there's an opportunity to really explore this concept of dynamic scoring, and I say that with a lot of caution, because I don't think we want to start just dynamically scoring everything and making all kinds of wild assumptions. I think we're better off with the more conservative assumptions. But at the same time, we have run into a number of cases here where we just don't have the ability to do some of the projections, I think, today that we would like to do as a legislature. And so maybe just a question, Representative Banyan, where do you envision, not just in terms of like response time and lead times on getting fiscal notes done, which frankly is amazingly quite quick given everything that's going on often, but where do you see enhanced capability available to the legislature through this as compared to just kind of controlling the function and having it be independent? What are the kinds of things with this new system and these new people that we could expect as a legislature? What kind of analysis, what kind of reporting, et cetera, would be beyond just the fiscal note crunching process that we might expect from this increased capability?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Downey. It's a great question to ask. Again, I'd go look at the list of duties on page 2 in the DE2. Those are not changes. Those are the long existing functions of the LCPFB. I think one thing I've learned here in my short time, but I think even Representative Kahn would agree, most of these functions are simply not done by LCPFB. And so if you looked at it, for example, we've made the comparison between this new legislative budget office and CBO. CBO does a number of budget and tax studies in its process. I believe that during the process of creating fiscal notes, that these new employees within LCPFB will actually have some ideas of the types of studies we could do. One could even imagine. And this is speculative, we probably would need legislation to do that doesn't currently exist. One could imagine asking them to do studies, much like we asked the legislative auditor to do studies. Hey, would you look at the fiscal impact of this or that? This is something that's done currently. We do a few of those studies in the auditor's office, but we would have people with a greater expertise in this new legislative budget office that could do such things. The trends and forecasts, which is the fifth on the list of duties, actually is something we will do. We will actually have a budget forecast done by the legislature as something that we would point to and say it as a point where we would get into a conversation with the governor's office, with the executive branch, who right now does kind of hand us, here's what your deficit is, which is just a forecast. It's their forecast. I'm not criticizing the forecast. It's typically been pretty darn good. But it's just it's only a forecast, and I always believe the best thing to react to with a forecast is to give them another one, and actually get the conversation going on the assumptions that are inside each one. So those are the types of activities that I think this office could provide for us beyond the fiscal note process, and perhaps one reason why we might want to have more resources in there than what's currently invested in MMB.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I like that answer and support the amendment and the bill, and again, a little maybe extra scrutiny and fine-tuning of the numbers between here and Ways and Means is probably appropriate given that we're just taking this fiscal note on very short notice. And I just want to support what Representative Banyan is saying, and I can't think how many times we as members rely on our own kind of off-the-cuff research on the Internet. And Representative Slawik, you and I have many times talked about the pile of research and academic material that's out there in early childhood and other areas, and to have an organization that could be extremely responsive to our committees to aggregate leading research and kind of, you know, filter what's going on in the academies and all that, I think that would be an extremely valuable function for the legislature, just beyond the production of fiscal notes for our committees. So thanks again, Representative Banyan. I think this is a really great idea.
Thank you. Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry to be late. You've all probably figured out by now I have kids to get off in the morning, so that's why I'm always late. So, but now we're almost done with session, so hopefully I can get here on time the rest of the week or tomorrow. A couple things. Representative Banyan, so I'm walking in the middle of conversation, but I'm not sure this has been asked. Where does the money come from? You know, Mr. Chair, when I see you talk about Ways and Means, and that if Ways and Means comes up with the money, it's hard for me to understand, as I've been on that for this year and a couple of years, is Ways and Means doesn't, I guess they can draw off the $32 million, the extra money, or can you clarify where the money would come from, or where you're thinking Ways and Means would get it from?
Well, Representative Slawick, the Ways and Means Committee is charged with the responsibility of making sure that the budget balances and that there are going to be sufficient revenues to cover the expenditures that are approved. And obviously, this is not an insignificant amount of money, but when you're talking about billions, it becomes a pretty small piece of all of this. And depending on how all of the numbers from all of the finance committees come together, if this is a real priority, and I think it is for us a real priority that we move in this direction, then perhaps ways can be found to fund this. But that's a judgment that we're not in a position to make. We don't have in this committee a reserve fund or another appropriation that we can decide how to spend. And so if it does, in fact, if it's a priority and it does, in fact, cost additional money, we have to rely upon the committee that oversees all of those budget proposals. And what they might do, I don't know. But by our saying that we think this is a priority and it ought to be considered, then Ways and Means has to make that final judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments and then one more question is, Representative Downey, maybe they could do your study on the fiscal insolvency at the federal level or something too. So maybe they could do things like that. And then, you know, I still worry, Representative Banyan, about the bias issue, and we've talked about this too, is and this is a particular interest of mine on legislative research and how much research affects legislative decisions, and that there is a bias everywhere, you know, in terms of Representative Downey could come up with one study saying one thing, and I could probably come up with another study saying another thing, and one could be from a university and one could be from a think tank, and who's right. And so there's always that question of how that works, and we all come here with our own experiences and our own backgrounds. So I think that my worry continues to be the sort of bias and the partisan issues. But that aside, when we're doing all the cutting and we're trying to reduce the state workforce and there's potentially freezes and everything going on, how do you now have new employees? I mean, is that just this is an exception to the rule, or it seems like the whole direction is to take down the workforce or reducing it, and here you are adding to it. So how do you justify that, even being a good idea?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Slawick. Yeah, I realize we're reducing workforce. I work at a university where we're reducing workforce. We have been for a couple of years. And in the process of doing that, we identified strategic priorities that we have as a university. And we actually are, in a couple departments, adding resources to those things because they're of great value to us. If you vote for this bill, if this bill becomes law, it's a statement that we've decided this is a priority for this body, and that we've been able to have the governor agree with that. We've talked all along, and I don't think it's in any way inconsistent for us to say we are funding our priorities, and we think one of the priorities we have is to provide for a budget process that gives us the best information possible to be the best stewards of the money we have, and it's my belief, and I think it's the belief of many people in the legislature, that this helps us get there. So I don't see it being necessarily in conflict. I don't think because you want to do an overall 12% or 15% reduction means that you must do a 12% or 15% reduction in every single agency, in every single department within an agency or office within an agency. I think in some places you can have no growth, in some places you might even have some increase because that's a priority.
Thank you.
Representative Slawi?
I think that's it, Mr. Chair, and Representative Banyan. The only thing as we look at ways and means and we look at the budget and we know it's going to come down to fiscal notes and things is, you know, in a lot of cases we're giving the MMB the authority to make the cuts if the money doesn't come in, and you know, one thought it would to be give them the authority to raise money too. There's two ways to look at this. You can make cuts or you can raise revenue. So we like to keep that revenue out there as part of the equation possibility for the end.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Banyan, you've already mentioned that in those the duties mentioned in the DE2 that are already in statute, and in your fiscal note says, although the Commission has existing statutory responsibilities, which generally have not been implemented in the recent years, this $1.5 million there to replace a computer system infrastructure that would be managed by MMB, is that going to go back and pick up these duties, or why don't we just delete those duties that are already in statute because we're not doing them anyway? I mean, to me, it seems like the $1.5 million is only going to help us in what we're actually focusing on now to get better fiscal notes, but it's not going to help us in what we already have in statute.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson, you're right. That fiscal note tracking system only does deal with the one function. There's other money in here that deals with some of the other functions as well. I'm actually a member of the LCPFP, or we've been named a member. We haven't met yet. And we haven't had a chance to look at that. Certainly is one of the things. The first thing I did when I was named to the commission was go get that statute out and see what that list of duties was, and then start to look around and say what's actually been done, and it turns out not terribly much. So I do think we're going to have some reinvigoration of that committee if we go ahead and do this, because they now will have something additional and have some people to work with, some staff to work with, which would allow them to get these additional duties done. And as I was answering for Representative Downey, I think those are very important things that we can do. But I would agree with you that $1.5 million is both just focused on fiscal notes and is essence something that we should have been preparing for quite some time. The question is really, and again, I respect the chair and I agree with the chair, that I'm going to let Ways and Means make that decision for us. I don't think we should do that, whether or not we have the money. But we ought to at least mark down on a sheet of paper somewhere, we know someday we're going to need to replace it because it's not going to last for much longer. And if it doesn't turn out that we get that $1.5 million through the process to the finish line, maybe what we'll do is we'll get a discussion going on replacing that and maybe finding some cheaper ideas so it doesn't cost $1.5 million. It costs something less.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the A3 amendment? If not, all in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion carried. The A3 amendment is adopted. Anything else, Representative Banyan?
I have nothing else, and I believe the proper motion is to move this pass as amended and go to the Ways and Means Committee.
That's correct, but let me just double check. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? If not, Representative Banyan moves that House File 1506 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. The bill is... I heard you.
Pangusto. Pangusto.
Members, we haven't had a lot of discussion about the aspect of this bill, which I think is also very significant, and that is breathing some new life into this Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy. Mm-hmm. I asked to be become a member of that because I have some real concerns about how that group might function and the needs that there are for it to function well. And I think that this bill will help to reinvigorate or give some new life to the whole purpose of that commission, where you have the House and the Senate sitting down together giving leadership for these fiscal planning issues. So with that, we will now move to Representative Downey's bill. Representative Downey. You may proceed, Representative Downey, with a motion on your bill.
Mr. Chair, I believe we laid over five.
That's right, we laid it over
previously.
It's on the docket. Yep. Yeah,
before the committee, and just so members are refreshed here, there is now a fiscal note for this contingency planning function before us. And if members want to just take a second to look at it. The department came back and said that there's actually no fiscal cost, that the duties and reporting requirements of this bill would be just part and parcel of the existing budget process and budget proposal preparation process, so there's no additional fiscal cost. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move the A2 amendment to clarify the kind of putting a time certain on the provisions of the bill to make sure that it isn't ambiguous as to when the department would have to start this. Thank you to Representative Benson. So if there's any discussion to that, I would move the A2 amendment.
Discussion on the A2 amendment. If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey. Contingency planning, I don't know, in your talking, your discussions with the different agencies or MMB, whoever it might be, did they give you any kind of an idea of what percentage of time or amount of structure that are the costs that they might figure in as far as what they already do now, and then just include this as part of their overall duties in projecting or making a budget for their particular area?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. This fiscal note came in yesterday afternoon, and I was moving fast, and now here we are this morning, so I've not really had a chance to go back and have discussions. But a couple of statements on page 2 of the fiscal note, I don't know if you have it in front of you, but they clearly embrace the steps and the activities that are in the bill as part of the bill description section. And then under their assumptions, there's a couple of interesting comments. The second from the bottom and the bottom comment, I think, were especially interesting. Recognizing the complexity of the interactions between federal regulations and agencies, and the fact that 33 agencies included federal funds in their biennial budget, And then down below that in the next paragraph, expenditure and or revenue formula, the second comment there, talking about the unique funding levels and programmatic structures making it difficult to quantify this fiscal note, which in my mind highlighted the very one of the very purposes of the bill, and that is it is really hard to know where these federal funding streams are, how our programs and our state funding interact with them and are dependent or interdependent on them. So I think their basic answer was, even given those complexities and some of those uncertainties, at this point they weren't going to ascribe a fiscal note cost to it and would subsume this activity as part of their normal budget preparation process, which, as you might imagine, is a fairly big one in each agency anyway. So I guess I'm comfortable with the fiscal note. I actually thought there would be some cost up front, frankly, to get the initial risk assessment done, but apparently they're comfortable that they can get it done in anticipation of the next biennium.
Thank you.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday, of course, we had the discussion on this bill, and I didn't want to jump on it. We had great discussion, as a matter of fact, but I wanted to say I spent a year of my life doing nothing but strategic planning at the War College, the Naval War College. That's all we did was contingency planning for in the event of war, in the event of social breakdown, all sorts of contingencies. So I'm actually quite surprised we don't have something like this at the state level. We absolutely need this. And we need to start understanding more and more, because coming into this new this year, I really didn't understand just how much money the federal government infuses in the state government. So I did some studying last night too, which is this little document right here that really lays out, really breaks it out much better. I wish I would have studied that early on, and I would have had a better understanding throughout the first few months of this job. So I just wanted to say that it's, you know, you could go a lot farther, and I think maybe because of the times, maybe we do go even farther with this whole idea, and I'd like to work with you to explore it in the, you know, at the bill level, as we, you know, when we at the fiscal note level, maybe we start looking at planning, and there's certainly some committees, as Representative Slavik was talking about, some committees certainly spend more of the federal dollars than others. We don't do it much here, as you talked about, the Department of Admin doesn't, but certainly the other committees do, and we probably need to bring that before this body and start looking at this on almost an everyday occurrence. So I just want to make those comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair, just a couple comments and a question. One, you know, as a matter of fact, this morning the child care federal funds, they have a hearing on them this morning, and they have a hearing tomorrow night. I always find it interesting that they schedule it during session, and they always say they have to, but so they do give us a chance to comment on them, but as mentioned yesterday, it's they really have already decided what they're doing with them. And I also think the legislature should actually be more involved in how we direct them, because we could direct legislation to change what they're doing. But it's very, very complicated. So I think getting a better handle on the federal funds is a good idea. I think that, you know, in regards to yesterday, it does make some sense to do some planning, but, you know, Sunday morning talk show, I saw where this was the next big issue between the parties, is that that's going to be this federal insolvency issue, honestly, and is going to be that debate. And so, honestly, that's why I think it's got just a little bit overlay of politics, because here we are on the national level seeing that happen. But Representative Downey, my question would be about the fiscal note. You know, I'm still learning things about fiscal notes. been here seven terms and still learning things. And the first time I saw a blank fiscal note like this was for that tax analytics proposal. Remember that came out blank? And it doesn't say zero on there. It's just blank. And so when we dug down into the tax analytics one, you might remember that they couldn't make an estimate because, I have to think a minute here, because it was going to be an RFP and they didn't feel they could make a good estimate of how much income was going to be saved or how much money was going to be saved or how many, you know, audits there were going to be until the RFPs went out. And we know then in the meantime the governor has done a proposal for a number of RSPs on analytics proposals. On this one, Representative Downey, when you actually look at the fiscal note on the second page, it talks about more on why it's blank. And that it doesn't say it's zero, but it is blank. It says that in the second paragraph, the second sentence, agency costs would be incurred, and depending on the scope and complexity of their federal programs, range from a minimal to significant staff efforts to complete the plans. So it seemed that, and then stage the estimates range from minimal time, 120 hours to of multiple staff time to complete the contingency plan. So it isn't say there's any cost. I think they're saying they can't estimate the cost, sort of like the tax analytics proposal. And that's, I just think, a caution for us as we go through things and we're requesting things very quickly and they come back without anything. I mean, I have to say I looked back at MFB and went, you know, really? I mean, really? There's no cost? It's and I don't know, we probably can't have testimony on why, but it does seem if we went through each department and each of them weighed in, that some cost would be built in here. So I think we need to be mindful of what it's saying. I mean, there is an assumption there's time here, that same state agency time that we're going to be cutting and taking down by 15% to put this together, but for whatever reason, they are not putting that in the fiscal note. Do you have a comment on that, or how did you read that differently?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Slawik, great points. Clearly, MMB is assuming that its activity as part of this process could be absorbed, I think, in the first paragraph of the assumption section. It says that while there is time and effort required, it's assumed MMB staff would complete this as part of their existing responsibilities, and then it goes down and kind of teases out the nuances of what this may or may not mean at the individual agency level. So I think your point is well taken in terms of the purview of this committee and the budgets here at MMB. Technically, there's not a fiscal cost that we have to deal with, whether we're imposing an extra set of effort and costs into the other agencies. I think I agree it's an open question and not one that we can answer or resolve perfectly here today.
Representative,
just a quick follow-up, and then just an example on sort of the other side. I gave the child care one and how they're going through this big plan today, which will take several hours, where that is a case where the money is fairly stable, we think, but you remember there's still federal money yet to come, even as we know they don't have to balance the budget, and they're still in the education area race to the top. And there's probably going to be another round of grant proposals in that, and there's a good chance, we hope, that Minnesota could potentially get some of that money. So at all times when maybe we're sort of losing and potentially gaining federal money all the time, and I think that's, and we know it's fluid like that, people might say, where does that race to the top money come from? But remember, we're trying to improve our education system here, and that's really what that was all about and still is all about. And we know that, what was our last program? Making the Grade. Oh, No Child Left Behind has had a lot of problems. And in Race to the Top, hopefully is going to clean some of that up, although not sure. So I think that we just have to keep an eye constantly what's happening, yes, with the federal government, but realizing money's also going to come in, and Minnesota's going to be competing for major grants, and potentially our revenue will go up by getting some of those. We hope. I hope.
Representative Slawik, you raise a valid point with regard to the so-called blank fiscal notes.
Yeah.
But there's also the flip side of that, and that is if we don't do the contingency planning, there are going to be unexpected costs that are going to be incurred trying to scramble, figuring out how are we going to respond to reductions in federal funding. And so I think it's a double-edged sword. I think it, you know, how do you measure that too? But clearly, if you don't do the contingency planning, you're going to incur some costs that maybe otherwise could be avoided if you had a plan mapped out as to how you would respond, rather than having to do it on the fly. And so just add that as a clarification there. Representative Downey, yesterday we had, it was yesterday, wasn't it? This time of the session, it's, you always have to kind of wonder, now, when was this we did this? But there was quite a bit of heartburn over the word insolvency. And I think that kind of heartburn detracts from the important thing here we're trying to do. And wondering if you have any suggestions on how we can come up with some different language here to avoid that kind of heartburn and still get the job done.
Mr. Chair, at the risk of asking the committee of the whole to do a lot of detailed work, I actually did think in my own mind about some alternatives, and default seems to be seems to imply, I think, an even worse scenario, at least to me, in terms of my understanding of default and insolvency in terms of financial issues. So if somebody has a suggestion for an oral amendment, you know, you could strike the word insolvency entirely and just call it federal contingency planning, or so I'm open to suggestions either here today on the floor or on the fly or between here and the floor to come up with something, because my intent is to draw attention, yes, to the risk that I think we have given the federal fiscal situation, but not to inflame it or turn it into the broader discussion that we had yesterday. I think I welcome suggestions.
Okay. Well, a couple of ideas here. It seems to me that on line 1.8, if we said federal funding contingency planning, and insert the word funding instead of insolvency. And then on line 10, after the word federal government, if there is federal government inability to meet its obligations or dramatically reduce federal payments, something like that, taking out, it rewords the, it takes the insolvency word out and says it in a different way. What we're really talking about here is the federal government's inability to meet its obligations or commitments that it's made to us. That's what we're really talking about. Representative Murray.
Mr. Chair, I echo your thoughts. I was thinking fund or funding was were the two words I would like to interchange there also with the insolvency word. So yeah. I agree.
Mr. Shepard, could you help us there with some, if we took in line 1.8 and deleted insolvency, put in the word funding, and then on line 10, implications for the agency if there is federal government, maybe it would be better to say if the federal government is unable to meet its obligation.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I think that the first suggestion on page 1, line 8 works exactly as you stated it. You would delete insolvency and insert funding in the headnote, and then on line 10, as you suggested, it might read, if the federal government is unable to meet its obligation or there are dramatically reduced federal payments.
Representative Downey, how does that sound to you?
Mr. Chair, I will defer to the will of the committee. I don't want to understate or paper over part of the intent of this bill, which was, you know, based on the circumstances that we're facing, to really point to the fact that there's probably an increased risk at the federal level that we need to start dealing with. But I think, fair enough, the wording doesn't need to inflame the debate. So I'm glad to accept those changes.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, are we just saying that meet their obligations? Is it you're implying then the financial obligations?
Yes.
Is that? I mean,
Perhaps the word financial, Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Shepherd, I don't know if that's something that needs to be in there or not.
Financial needs to be
right before
in there. Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that I have a problem with the financial obligations, but the question, I was going to comment more on this insolvency, but we're kind of past that. We're getting past that. But I think that the body and the richness of the debate has been about contingency planning, no matter what the situation would be. And I know that Representative Downey and others are watching about the increased risk that we have at the federal level, mm-hmm. which is kind of, you know, making us a little anxious about getting this moving. But if we're really going to have a real and true debate about really good policy and a really good practice, then I think that we would, I was thinking about Representative Leidecker's experience at the War College, that it wasn't always when we were in the, you know, when war was ready, when we thought we were going into war, when you kind of start thinking about what would happen if we do, what region, what would happen if we were attacked, etc. So it sounds like something that we would like to do as just a good, solid policy. And I think about Representative Flowick's comments about taking the political aspect and toning that down a bit, and so we're not kind of marching on one side of the aisle or another trying to defend our particular, you know, a candidate or representative on one side of the aisle, but really look at this issue of what do we do. And I think it would be a great opportunity to look at the policies. Like, for instance, we haven't talked about a lot about unfunded mandates. So I think about it in that way, that if the money doesn't come, do we still have to provide the service? We get in this arrangement that says, if we give you this money, then this is what you have to do with it. I think the idea is that if we don't give you the money, do we still have to do that? And I think that that is, for me, what I start to think about. And I think if we think about our partners kind of down the line, either municipal government, local government, or nonprofits that kind of effectively contract with us, that's what they are, counties, that's what they talk a lot about. You're making us do things, but you're not giving us the money in which to do it. And so I think that this is a great opportunity, if we can tone down the rhetoric and we don't use it as a political opportunity, to really get a good look at the funding streams, what do we do, and then start asking those real questions on if all of a sudden we get to a point that not necessarily we're bankrupt, but we are going to have to cut federal spending, do we still have an obligation to provide those services? So I think that that, if we can get it to that point, then this would be something that I think would be useful.
Representative Slavik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the wording definitely does help. I mean, it's this whole paradigm, the political paradigm, whereas, as I said, it's mentioned insolvency is the next great frontier, which is one of fear, you know, fear of the nation of what's going to happen. And I think we prefer to come from a hopeful paradigm, that there's hope and that the money potentially could be there. I just, with that, members, give a caution and look at what's happening in Health and Human Services with early MA. You know, we had, a situation where we had a governor who did not want early MA, but left the sole option that the new governor could come in. There was a new governor signed early MA, it's on the table, going to happen, and then the legislature in both bills has now taken out early MA. So one thought I had, we both sit on Health and Human Services, and so does Chair Lanning, is that this not be used to find federal funds that we don't like and start to try to eliminate them. And I think that there are always, especially around healthcare right now, a lot of overlays of politics onto that. But there's also a lot of realities, and so you look at the early MA versus now the ever famous $300 million waiver that we're looking at, and they're both federal money. I mean, they are, and so I think strategic planning is important. I think the wording change helps, but again, if we can truly look at what's best for the state, I think that's what's important.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, let me go back to talking about the wording of your of what I think is supposed to be an oral amendment. Yeah. And
I haven't actually made it yet.
I know, but I think we're going to process of forming one, right?
Yes.
I had actually left here thinking maybe what you wanted was the word illiquidity rather than insolvency, that we would be temporarily out of cash, able to pay for the federal government would be temporarily unable to pay bills. My one question, could I get Mr. Shepherd to read again the second change on 110?
Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and members, as proposed by Representative Lanning, the change on line 110 would be delete everything after the word if in the middle mm-hmm. of the line there, and then insert, the federal government is unable to meet its financial obligations or there are dramatically, and then the line 11 would continue on as is. So it would read, if the federal government is unable to meet its financial obligations or there are dramatically reduced federal payments.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. My concern is that the definition of obligation is whatever it is Congress and the President decides are their obligations. So at some point, they pass a law and say, "Well, we're no longer obliged to pay that," and so now you're stuck. And I mean that to be, that's very much a concern, regardless of which people are in the office at the time, right? What we're really looking at is the fact that federal payments appear to have the possibility, okay, I'm couching this as carefully as I can, to be highly volatile, all right? And what we want is language that represents we need a contingency for that volatility. We can't just assume we're going to receive the number that's in the current budget from the federal level, right? I want to be careful that in the way we word this, that we've captured that volatility concept. And I'm worried about using the word obligation. It may tie the hands of people because we can simply, Congress can just pass another law and say, well, yeah, I know we paid that for the last 50 years, but we're not paying it anymore. Tough luck.
Well, members, as I said earlier, to me the most important thing is that we enact this contingency planning. And I hate to see us get hung up over a word like insolvency if that is giving people a lot of heartburn. And normally I don't like to do this on the fly, which we are in a sense doing here right now. And so an alternative would be to lay this over again and give some folks a chance to massage these words and see if we can in fact come up with something that reduces the heartburn and yet still gets this important job done. Representative Murray.
How about a simple answer there where it says implications of the agency of a reduction in federal funds. Stop. That's the rest of the sentence.
Yeah, that's another
option.
You're
not talking about obligations, you're not talking about insolvency, you're just saying a reduction of federal funds.
Or drastic reduction in federal funds.
Well, drastic is in the eyes of the beholder.
You really don't need it. I mean,
simple.
So, do you want to read a line on how what you're suggesting?
I would start at 1.1, Mr. Chairman, and say implications for the federal agency of a reduction in federal funds. Period, and that would end. I would knock out the rest of that sentence and also the reduced federal payments on line 1.11.
Okay. Well, members, I think we need some folks to do some work on this, and perhaps Representative Downey, we could have a couple of volunteers that might confer with you. And it's your bill, and we don't want to do something to your bill that you do not support, but I think if we can find an alternative wording here, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to take the time today to do that and to be ready to present the bill, hopefully for a vote tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank
you. Well, members, I'm going to lay this bill over, and we will have it back tomorrow with perhaps an amendment that will bring peace in the valley, as they say. With that, members, tomorrow we have a couple of bills related to the one bill, the Norton bill, tomorrow is going to Commerce today. Oh, that's right. That's right. What's happened here is that the bill that's on our docket ended up getting sent to Commerce, so Representative Norton is going to have to move on the House floor today to get it moved to our committee here so we can hear it tomorrow. And Commerce can still hear it. We could have to move it to Commerce as a result of our meeting. And then we're also hearing the Creasel bill on charitable gaming. And Representative Downey's 418. So we've got another full agenda tomorrow. Meeting adjourned.